Welcome back. It's the Odelay Show. To the Odelay Show. With the Odelay Show. Yours truly. By now, it's the 4th of September, 2020. As noted in my house notes on the 1st, this is a series of questions. The first of which is what causes the apparent policy gridlock in Washington, D.C.? This is kind of a rehash of what I've been banging the drum about all semester. I mean, but it's a good reset for the follow-up questions, which are, what are the results of it? Who are the beneficiaries? What people or specific groups are involved one way or the other or indifferent? To what extent are they aware of their involvement or complicity with respect to their effective roles thereabouts? And last, what are the effects of this long creeping failure in policy, past, present, and future? Now, it's fine to be banging the drum about this sort of thing. It's an election year, but the problem kind of there is it's really more appropriate to be banging the drum about this all of the time, forever, all the time, yesterday and tomorrow and all night, because part of the problem with the system is the electoral system causes a false sense of security that attention every 4 or 2 years or every time there's an election is sufficient for government oversight, public oversight. It's not. In fact, typically, these politicized elections, of course, this is the standard, they're used as cover for other things. It's the corporate media gangbang that occurs. It just covers up other stuff. But it's other stuff that's not getting covered anyway. This just adds another layer of garbage that clouds the issues. A cloudy issue would be fine, better than nothing at all. But, you know, so I think clouding the issue is a little bit overly generous. Anyway, so yeah, this isn't all that far off from the last show. But, you know, there's a few of my pet historical issues and the like around. So, you know, it's a good start. These follow-up questions also are more dissertative. What are the results of it? I mean, a lot of conversation about what are the results of it come up in the initial conversation. Because, you know, one's trying to communicate the perils of the situation at hand. I mean, it's a crime in progress. It has been a long time. It's getting worse and worse. But, you know, I'm trying to have some academic or intellectual rigor, you know, to this thing, historical rigor. So instead of me just polemically grousing about corporate politicians and the failed state, whatever, ongoing war, I'm trying to put a little structure to that, underpinning the arguments, so, you know, on this program. But it's more... you know, I can less easily riff thereabouts, and actually, you know, it's more formal. So, I guess what I'm saying is, okay, what specific groups are involved? Well, I keep saying all of that. But there's a little qualitative analysis, like, to what extent are they aware? And I'm like, okay. And that becomes a philosophical question. To what extent are you metaphysically aware of what you're doing? Well, this is well understood in political science that, you know, among the taxonomy, a lot of people really do think like the security state has its state religion, it has its protocols, parameters, and ideological constraints, and that's just how it's defined. And the people who end up there they're a part of that organism. So, you know, when you're talking about are they aware, are they not aware, what side of the binary issue are they, you know, well, I mean, in a sense you could say they're aware with all their heart. In another sense you could say they're, you know, they're the most unaware agents in the whole operation because they're holding the bag. Anyway, so this, unfortunately, I mean, I like talking philosophy and stuff like that and could go on for decades about it, but people don't like to hear it. Most guy in the street typically don't. I mean, I guess some do, you know, whatever, but you know, other philosophically inclined people. But when I start doing that, I feel like I lose, you know, there's a certain There's a certain clarity in the eyes of many, which is lost when you start talking about those sorts of ideological, you know, that social science underpinning or psychology. You know, and it's like, and I'm not a psychologist, so you know, so I am what I am and various things, but not necessarily that. Anyway, but it does get into that. And so, what are the effects of this long treatment failure in a policy past, present, future? That's the last question. And it's like, basically, you know, as a working journalist over the years, I'm not in that field properly speaking anymore. I mean, I'm just, you know, I do audio programs on the weekends because, because I can. And, during that career, I saw so many examples of failed states. And it, you know, it's the more I looked, the more I found. And so, subjectively, from my, is that a streetlight effect? Is it because I'm looking for it? Or is it getting worse and worse? I think it's both. Because I think that obviously when you got a reckless economic oversight at the national public policy level, like, that can only go so long before it has real effect on the institutions. And these bailouts, like unprecedented bailouts, like, you know, whatever. I always harp about the TARP funds at the end of Bush 2. Well, that was a disaster. Like, you bailed out a bunch of criminals at the taxpayers' expense. And, I mean, yeah, there was a deficit, and it had been really going bananas ever since Reagan, and it had been bad all through the Cold War. But that was just a spit right in the eye of Beechnut or Redman or whatever you're chewing in the eye of the taxpayer. And it, like, I have a shill like George W. Bush, who's not an intellectual, you know, and is not necessarily a free thinker. I mean, whatever, good, you know, a good Texas boy, except that he's not a Texan. But whatever, I mean, he had to do what he had to do as a wartime president. That could be, and his apologists say, still, and they're around, mainly in the war party. But it's like, any third party objective observer is going to be like, well, he just does that. They just do that. That place, you know, it's clear. They've been taken over, and they don't care. They'll bail out the rich and let the middle class wither to nothing, to where you've just got this herd of sheep and a bunch of poor people and just a bunch of constituents that are dependent on the faux news to be quote unquote true for them to justify their existence in a big sycophantic bottom feeding hellhole empire. Well, and you get everybody to agree about the same thing, all trillion people or what, you know, however many, that millions of billion people in the United States. And it doesn't matter that you're wrong. You know, it works. That flies. That's Leviathan. Anyway, so what are the effects of this long creeping failure in policy, past, present, and future? Well, you know, you keep burning everything, and pretty soon it'll choke out, you know, the sun. And the only thing, what keeps burning those things are this fiat currency on the, you know, with this writ carte blanche from the American people, who actually haven't given it. They've just been duped out of it. You know, and as these schools fail, they've been closed for 6 months, basically over some panic that any pathologist will tell you is undue. And that's why it's political. It's like people, it's the cooties. Literally shut down the world over the cooties. In that sense. Like, because you're more likely to be affected politically by this than biologically. That's what, since I mean the cooties. Okay? So anyway, that forthcoming, I got some stuff. I got on after the holiday weekend here, I'm going to have a lot less time to do this. So that will be a barrier to questions 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. But anyway, tonight, I hope you're listening at night and enjoying your off free time, you know, listening to me, the Dark Storm. So, you know, yeah, I'm not going to really have some. I mean, maybe I will. I don't know. I really don't know how the outlay is going to be, what my quote-unquote homework is going to, the extent to which it's going to be like. But I have to clear it as if it were going to be a real bear. So, but I'll get through it. And these translations that I'm doing in these multilingual productions are a great help to me, you know, as a linguist. So, you know. But, you know, and for a while I wasn't doing even English at all. I don't think anybody didn't know if can I say it if anyone's listening? But anyway, I'm going to keep doing this. There may be a delay. And hopefully a little bit of rigor, you know, to what's forthcoming. Anyway, expect to have cover ground that, you know, already pretty much seems obvious, but I'm going to iterate those things and move this discussion forward a little bit. Anyway, question one. What causes the apparent policy gridlock in Washington, D.C.? There's your 10-minute preamble, right? All right, well, and like I said, this is has a lot in common with the last program. But here you go. Let's move forward together. Answer. Perceived or ostensible ideological impasse between the two corporate underwritten caucuses that occupy the American Legislative Assembly, right? Executive office and the judicial system. These parties, though, both are underwritten and evenly hedged upon by the same list of special corporate and foreign policy interests, fight about how to catastrophically, legalistically, albeit illegally, mismanage fiscal policy. In that way, legislators get to abuse the venue for their own petty capital and political interests. Yet even that abuse is a mere sideshow compared with the dastardly main event that is foreign policy. The manufactured gridlock is used as the standard excuse for the legislatures and the executive office's failure to provide sound or even coherent whatsoever management of national government oversight, operations, diplomacy. So, quick note, judges in the federal court system often attempt to separate themselves from the failings of the other two branches. They have to, forensically. They have to sequester themselves to do their job because they are answerable by rights to justice. And they often are appointed, not elected. So, you know, and that's why, that's the reason why that the judicial appointments exist. But because of the partisan political nature of judicial appointments, the venues can also be abattoirs of justice, you know. But the judiciary is beyond the scope of this particular essay. We'll save it for later. But I will say, like, that corporate partisanry, one or the other, usually I'm in the habit, having historically worked in newspaper industry as a reporter long ago, more than a decade ago, I got to where, after I quit and knocked around a little bit, and, you know, in various fields, got to where I wouldn't read a newspaper, or I made a rule where if I encountered the word Democrat or Republican, I would put it down and not read anything else in that publication. And if it was a usual suspect, I got to where I'd avoid the publication altogether. The problem with that is that it has successfully extricated me from that media stream. Now, not such a big deal, because it's corporate media and it's garbage and bias and insufficient and manipulative and complicit with basically political racketeering. But there is also a certain process service that occurs in those what are still venues of record for everything from local auctions by the county of pot property, land for sale, death announcements. So I missed a whole lot of news, sports news notwithstanding, from the time I left working at a daily newspaper. And I can kind of come back to it now. And when I left, it was like at the end of Bush 2. And like, but I realized that, I mean, I'm missing things. Like, and I don't know. And it's because the separation is not entirely complete. Certainly not in people's heads regarding what's properly a news outlet and what's just corporate information. And there is still separation of that, so to speak. Church and state is not completely separated. Okay, so that industry still tries to hold on to its historical coattails of being, yeah, politicized, but still having some duty, and there being within that institution some substantial faction of people who are duty bound and hell bent to serve that role, whereas now all of that ethical underpinning is gone, and all it's, you know, and so it's not actually, it can't be used as the standard of record, but it kind of is. Like, a lot of, like, local governments still have, you know, they're, we're going to advertise them. Well, I mean, a lot of people move that to the net, like, right, to the to the groups on some social media thing, but that's not getting process served to the people. So anyway, there's still that kind of divorce that's certainly not clear in the eyes of people, and certainly not clear in the eyes of children, except for that a lot of them are not literate in the sense that they would ever read a newspaper for all of their duration of life on Earth. There's that. So, you know, you can write them off as being completely through the divorce, that faction, which is many of the youth. But anyway, a subset to that caveat corollary, those judges who self-sequester, that I kind of get how they feel. Now, forensically, you got to do this. You can't be influenced. Like if you're a writer, you got to be careful what you put through the cognitive filter, because it tends to spray back out when you generate creative content. Same goes for forensic rarefication, where you judges are an interesting set of people. And they're, you know, that's applied ethics. And so that's philosophy. Circumstantial evidence, which is, you know, on TV inadmissible in court, or like in Reservoir Dogs when the old dad guy that's kind of leading the whole thing is like, proof, you don't need proof when you got instinct, you know, and you don't. You can know, even though you don't have any proof that the kids are smoking dope or whatever, but it's obvious. You know, they're like, where's your proof? Well, they don't, you know, okay, you're stoned. So, that demographic is interesting. And what would be called circumstantial evidence in secular courts is basically metaphysics. Without some acumen thereabouts, one has no mastery over one's surroundings, and, you know, you're going to make a terrible judge and you're going to make a terrible anything if you can't command control over your world. Now, that's what's at stake with, at this point, in terms of failed states regarding humanity and civilizations and nation states. Will you let this monolithic corporate media that's basically the ball bat coercive weapon of international rich fascists steal your ability to discriminate and be autonomous in your own mind? And certainly, you know, that's where the real battleground is. You got all kinds of philosophers sitting in jails. And that's one thing. And then, you know, external, you know, applications of freedom are another, like electoral representation, taxation with representation, all of which is in the toilet. Free speech, press, freedom to assemble, all of which is in the toilet. Due process and, you know, due cause in civil procedure, all of which is completely in the toilet, all because of this war state that we're involved with. I mean, I think the war state's a symptom of it. But people just get holed up in these situations over generations, and, you know, hey, there's no other way for them to live than they infested, and they don't care about everybody else. They don't care if everybody else was an army of beautiful, hypersexualized philosopher deities. They wouldn't care then either. They'd kill all them too. And certainly a bunch of poor people. Anyway, how's that for a digression? 18 minutes into the show, and I look at my audio track and it's clipping and getting loud. By the way, I did not get my driver written for my Steinberg equipment, so I'm still having to use the webcam mic. It's okay. The corporate partisan constituents do not effectively represent the interests of the United States. Whether it is because they cannot or because they will not is beside the point. They do not represent your interests unless yours are aligned with such things as 1, foreign meddling and intervention to include war in perpetuity on other continents, 2, forcing your religion upon strangers, either in your own country or in faraway lands, 3, a runaway war-driven economy which benefits the rich, erodes the middle class, and further pauperizes the poor. I don't think I get this loud and clip as much in my audio track. Clipping is when you are louder than the fidelity threshold will allow on your sound system, and it kind of comes across as crackly, and it hurts the ears of people. In case you didn't know what I was talking about. But on those foreign language recordings, I tend to be, I think, more reserved because I'm fighting through the not mother tongue. Regarding our economy, bad as it already was, due to the coronavirus panic, it has now floundered, thereby laying further bare the decimation of the American industry segment and the working and middle class, the virus pandemonium has also further pierced the veil about the unabashedly imperial nature of the ridiculously overhedged military budget expressly hell-bent on permanent war, which is an impossibility in practical, in terms of tractable policy, because it will bring about total conflagration. We keep burning it, it'll choke out the sun, and certainly will continue to destroy people's expectations and actualizations of freedom and civility and peace. As well as global military control are these things that the veil has been further pierced about due to this coronavirus corporate political vector pandemic. And global military control is intractable because we're not the only people on the planet. As you know, and empires always overextend and fall. They trip over a blade of grass eventually. The virus pandemonium further unveils also the petty and dangerously crippled state of United States diplomacy, our shattered Bill of Rights, the rule of civil law within the United States, and the outright and long-running usurpation of national government by foreign special interests and elite capital interests, notwithstanding their geographical origins, to include religious regressives, at least one, local and otherwise, at least one national newspaper refers to the coronavirus as the Chinese Communist Party virus, and I think they're Chinese, and they're New York-based, and their hub at, operations is out of Southern California, but they're obviously Chinese dissidents, and their base appear to support the incumbent in the White and Oval Office. At least one national news, and somebody should, at least, I mean, well, never mind, strike that, but it's like the only one I've seen that does. At least one, because I quit reading the Wall Street Journal a long time ago, and I've quit reading the Times, so it's like, yeah, well, I don't know. At least one national newspaper refers to, I already read that. And regardless of one opinion about the moniker of Chinese Communist Party virus, it nevertheless successfully communicates a harsh and well-deserved criticism of the domestic impact of long mismanaged American diplomatic and economic policy abroad. Hey. There is an ethical and intellectual bankruptcy prevailing among the public discourse, and our so-called self-governing nation becomes indistinguishable from other historical police states, imperialist occupiers, elite rich oligarchs who exist at the expense of virtually everyone, strictly for the benefit and pleasure of their own fiat global interests, which trod roughshod across basically everyone, through total control of capital at the national government level. That's state capitalism, not libertarian capitalism. If you're having a capitalist soul-searching, wayfinding moment in your life. To perpetuate this theft of public office is the reason why you're asked, basically almost like at gunpoint, by corporate media to choose between two generally undesirable factions. I mean, generally undesirable is an understatement, and that's too much credit. The disgusting and horrific criminal factions, neither of which are sufficient, both of which require you to concede major ethical points as well as your own personal freedom, as well as intellectual points. I mean, it's obvious that it's nonsense. To essentially get your signature of approval and be curled into the conspiracy of war and racketeering and sex trafficking. Your endorsement is required, so don't provide it. Choose neither. It is a false dichotomy because evil is evil, and those two parties ultimately represent the same nightmare failed state corporate hellscape. Anyone stumping for one or the other leg of that same monster has either been fooled by the whole charade, haha, or worse, they are aware of it, willing to abandon ethical baselines, and certainly willing to attempt hustling you into it, and many people buy right into it. And the problem is, that's a Turing test that a lot of people are failing. And then somehow all the groups of people that fail that stupid test, they get to work in national office. So how's that for WTF? Don't be hustled, it's that simple. What to do about once they're all corralled up in it? I don't know. What's not working right now, we're having difficulty containing DC and the war state, obviously. If I'm to believe what the corporate media tells me. Corporate media tells me we're at war. I think we are. Judging by the dark face of humanity in its overarching sense, like that which I recognize here at the local level, I'm inclined to believe it. Local elections are often partisan affiliated too, footnote here, for all of you grassroots activist. That's tough work because, as I just mentioned, at the local level, you can see the same manifestations of, you know, why there's a problem at the international level right across the street or down at City Hall. Yeah, it's, you know, it's not new. And local leaders, you know, often then, because local elections are partisan affiliated, local leaders must obtain the blessing of the local mainstream party office if they expect to have, like, procedurally electoral success at the grassroots or local level. Okay? And that's a gamut. That's a game. It's a, you know, you basically have to, you have to successfully sell yourself to the League of Women Voters, and the GOP has to be complicit. Or you have to sell yourself to the local GOP, and the League, and the Democratic Party headquarters has to, all right, okay. Because they sit there, like the two towers, and say, yeah, no, yeah, no, yeah, no. And what that causes is people to have to conform to these kind of simulacra of issues that kind of don't really 100% meet where the rubber meets the road. Now, it varies from community to community, nation to nation. Obviously, at the national level, United States, it's a complete idiot zoo. And there is not a drop of ethics anywhere. I mean, anybody who's like, whoa, sex trafficking, whoa, too much cocaine at this party, whoa, what do you do with all that money? Whoa, isn't that against the law? Whoa, isn't that unconstitutional? That's the first person who gets their ass thrown right out of that political construct and slandered on their way out the door, virtually 99% of the time. So the people who, you know, so I will give you that. Anybody who is actually working in good faith in Washington has to keep very quiet about it. I, like, have gotten to where I, like, looking for a job, looking for an inroad to graduate program somewhere. I've gotten to where I understand, or a group of friends, or organization, NGO, anything. I have to basically say, when I come in, look, I've worked in sex trafficking task forces and narcotics interdiction, and if you got a problem with that, you know, you probably don't want to hire me. And you know what happens? I don't get hired. I don't get bought. They do not want me. That's awful. And that usually is not a political class. I mean, they have their own internal politics at whatever organization you're trying to get through the fence of unsuccessfully. But and there's those are the silos of civilization wherein there are more circumspect brain trusts, unlike in public politics for the most part, which is a free-for-all of crime. So certainly you get harvested if you can't fit into the populist movement of Leviathan in public politics. So local elections are what they are. But if you want to get in there to these seats of government, which are occupied just as belligerently oftentimes at the local level as they are at the national level anyway, then you have to play ball in that sense, you know? And if you want to go in there and be like, hey, do not fill Karchner Caverns full of fucking molten lead or whatever, you know? Or just, you know, no, we're not going to pour battery acid in the lake. No, we're not going to sell everybody at the high school to, where are we selling them to? Venezuela. No one will know. Anyway, it's not happening. Dropped an F-bomb. I tried to do that and done it many episodes. Forgive it. If I need to ask for forgiveness from you, and I guess if you're listening, I don't have to ask your forgiveness. So it goes at the national level. Those parties are a tool for manipulating electoral results. Voting along party lines is therefore unwise, even though it's the only game in town, because they're only correlated with actual political platforms at the procedural or electoral level. And it is especially unwise when obviously both parties at the national level clearly do not offer any real choice beyond officially pandering to special interest groups and funding. Nationally, both parties have increasingly destroyed American liberty at home and become increasingly imperialistic at the expense of humanity's future and peace and civility among nations. So it puts you in a position. If you want to exercise your right to vote, you got to find alternative ways to express yourself other than walking straight into complicity with a bunch of crimes. It's tough. It's not the storybook sale that you were sold in school, and it has gotten worse. And if you want to do the right thing and fit in, or make it look like you're doing the right thing and fit in, you're just making it worse, oftentimes. So if you find your interests are in line with the things listed above, the negative crimes, you might think the national executive and the legislature are doing great, among other public offices. The problem with that is all aforementioned chaos resulting from fabricated two-party partisan impasse, or more accurately, call it what it is, a hostile occupation at the national government level by corporate special interests and global militarist evangelicals. The problem with all of that is its unconstitutionality, its racketeer-driven statutory crime, and the treason of it all, the outright, not in the best interest of any person who wants to live a civil existence. I do think more people are giving up hope of civility, and reasons for which include that it's rarely rewarded, rarely demonstrated, rarely taught, rarely encouraged under the increasingly monolithic and hostile influence of the occupants. Our occupants. Civility becomes increasingly, and it works, that occupation. And lockstep, civility becomes increasingly intractable as civil liberties continue to erode. War, killing, non-compassionate existence, all of which lead to a path of death and misery, subjugation, of arbitrary subjugation of classes of people. A path often paved with ignorance and stupidity are the fruits of incivility, for which the American people are increasingly complicit fodder. The footholds of this occupation have been increasing for a long time. With all due caveats, I often watermark it at the beginning of World War I, more than a century ago, when America's military was yoked to the industrially revolutionized economy. It's just what happened. In part by way that it's what happens to industrialized economies, all of them. In part by way of, in our case, the 16th Amendment, 61st Congress, which transgressed the United States constitutional guarantee against taxation without representation. That, all of that was there in place as part of a plan in anticipation of industrialization to prevent the United States from becoming a war machine. And they wanted to keep this as a libertarian business enterprise, loosely governed, and with most of the power lying on the states, so that we were torqued for business, not as a war machine. That's why it was that way. When they did that, those sons of bitches in the 61st Congress, they knew what they were doing. Ensuing World War II, the Cold War severely ratcheted up. And if that was at a, you know, at that point, there was nobody, generations pass. And as each political generation and generally societal generation passes, more is forgotten and more is stolen from the new generations by conspirators from the old or whomever. Ensuing World War II, the Cold War severely ratcheted up the state of permanent war in the United States, which regressive and mainstream corporate partisan American politicians, since, let's say, from the German reunification in 1990 and resignation of Mikhail Gorbachev in 1991, been squandered, have raced to rekindle, or rather re-ice, for a new Cold War. From my perspective as a Gen Xer, it's hard for me to keep quiet about the Reagan administration's pandering to the American religious zealotry in a shockingly successful populist media spin to American voters of gutting progressive policy and tax cuts for the rich as both good things, a standard neoconservative agenda, but never before had anyone attempted it as a populist agenda, like so successfully. Something that was in such blatantly antithetical to most voters, but it succeeded as a populist pitch. Now, a lot of people trying to sell that as a populist thing, that always was tried, but it didn't ever really have full overarching success like it did under Reagan, and it has stayed. Once that toehold in balderdash was achieved, why let it go? You know, that becomes trite law. It doesn't matter whether it's true or not, it's politically realistic and is therefore used. And since then, the slide into disaster in the presidential, in the United States executive it redlined. So, and you can look at some of the little mechanizations that were going on with Nixon and stuff, but Reagan blew the doors. And they're still blown. This was a major political coup for the American elite, neoconservative special interests, and the electoral strategy remains in full force. As a writer and publisher and an American libertarian, another item that keeps me up at night is the folly of the Telecommunications Act of 1996. That was presented by a legislature comprising the first Republican majority in 40 years and signed by President Clinton, okay, the Democrat. It was already bad enough, but the act's deregulation of monopoly ownership of media ushered it. Well, it helped, for example, that media was a big part of the Reagan cell. I mean, it was already bad enough. It was bad. And newspapers were eating each other, and there was already a huge, basically, it was a substantial monopoly problem in information outlets. But that just completely blew the doors on the thing. Clinton, what is he doing? Why did he sign that? Why? I mean, the why of it seems forensically clear. It had nothing to do with the fact that it was like good for, no, it wasn't. It was ridiculous. It was a Newt Gingrich disaster, you know, among a bunch of others, however many of them there were. But it's deregulation of monopoly, further deregulation of monopoly ownership of media ushered in the modern era of corporate cable news that's just indistinguishable from the Terminator over there on the other channel. It is. Totally. I mean, Reagan was a naval propagandist in World War II. Like, wasn't an accident. His act of being dumb and seen, while he may have become fine, didn't he die of Alzheimer's? But I mean, that was part of his shtick. That's part of his cover. He was a censor. I mean, he worked with Hollywood during World War II. He was a special for the Navy, and he was a propagandist. And he worked with that detail to put spin in media, that's how that stuff works. That's where he came from. Anyway, it's death blow to what remained of the... Okay, right. Total information and public dialogue control. Fruition of George Orwell's dystopian vision of government propaganda, where those movies started to look exactly like I said, what looked like on the channel next door, which wasn't a quote-unquote news channel. It was a death blow to what remained of the free American press. I'm going to pause this and catch the phone. Who can it be? So where were we? A death blow to what remained of the free American press, where every city always had previously at least two major broadsheet newspapers, which a dynamic which was struggling more so. Invariably, one corporate owner ate the other subsequent to the Telecoms Act of 96. Go look at it, it's a disaster. And go look at the political context in Washington, at the Capitol. And under which it occurred. Now, it was much easier for the corporate political monolith to sell, branded as populist issues, as aforementioned. More tax cuts to the rich, and more scuttling of modern government programs of the sort which are necessary in an egalitarian, non-xenophobic, post-civil rights legislation bureaucracy like ours, as well as more international war to be sold more easily to an increasingly easily stampeded class of politically uneducated Americans, young people, and historically unaware. As the constituency of a so-called self-governing nation have failed to protect its values legally, okay, constitutionally, through its own public governance, we the people ultimately bear the blame for it, that failure. Technically, it does not matter that it was stolen. Basically, a conspiracy against the best interests of the nation, our nation, that was allowed to proceed, for example, in the aforementioned ways. It has been an obvious taking of control, and it had been a long time coming, and it has been ramped up in recent decades, and it was allowed to further proceed by an increasingly flagrant policy of our so-called leaders in Washington, D.C., which today continues to put forth more and more ridiculous proposals to the American people, who, generally, in turn, continue to buy the lies. The problem now is it's gone on for so long and has continued its exponential increase in reckless stupidity that cataclysmic unknowns are unavoidable. I mean, if I were the former, the KGB, if I were the green wave of hostile occupation and takeover at the grassroots level from south of the border, if I were trying to destabilize the American economy in a Cold War scenario, what is happening today politically and economically and geopolitically and infrastructurally and culturally in the United States is exactly the sort of thing which I would collude and conspire against the American people to try to precipitate in order to take down that civilization, to bury this civilization. Now, those were the ostensible goals of, let's say, erstwhile adversarial political regimes. And when opportunities for those to literally become erstwhile, as such as the aforementioned reunification of Germany, the restructuring of the Soviet Politburo and its political geography. Those are the sorts of things where, because you can't defeat the sort of thing that's tearing America down from inside now, with money and bombs and garbage and lies, you can't defeat that. That stuff only serves to tilt. It's used against you, that inertia. You know, it only makes it worse. You can't defeat that stuff, okay? And when it's just taken away as a gift to us, okay, then you take it. You don't just act like a spoiled child who's talking a bunch of nonsense to the person who's about to say, I'm telling you, stop. You know, they had to eventually put handcuffs on the child, on the whatever, not the child, well, whoever. Some cross a line, he ends up down in Florence or Huntsville or wherever the state prison is, whatever. You just can't go so long. At some point, you're such a dangerous to both yourself and your neighbors that you have to be contained by hook or crook. So what I'm saying is that these mechanizations politically and this partisan nonsense that's gotten so bad and exponentially so bad in recent decades is a dead hand, foolproof undoing of the United States. And it's pretty much to hand here now. And you can look and say, well, we're all still, no, you're not. There's no Bill of Rights. There's no freedom. Foreign capital interests are in charge of your government. The middle class is basically gone. And no one cares, and leadership especially doesn't care. Okay? And you can put a sign on that and say this and that and this and that. People steal from you all the time with official emblems written on them. They're just stealing from you using the best weapon they know have, which is a big lie, which is what those seals and emblems represent. Now, don't even need a gun. There is no free West. There have been failed states I've encountered increasingly so as a journalist, number one, because I've been looking for them. Number two, because there are more. And this is it. There is nothing left. You are beat. And you are being given a chance to get up off the mat because China, Russia, Canada, Mexico doesn't have time to babysit a continent full of morons. We have the resources here. And if you're so easily fooled by a hat full of liars for 40 years, you know, then you don't deserve to be free and you don't deserve to be in control of yourself. And the world, humanity is, this is a silver lining, egalitarian and healable enough to where, like, okay, get up and go about your business. But you have to educate yourself. You have to quit falling for this garbage of electoral politics and the corporate media, which doesn't represent the realities of what things should be here. People who speak out against the sort of censorship and restraints against assembly and usurpation of public government, they are politically beaten silly and silenced. If not snuffed, if their children aren't snuffed and hooked up. This is a real thing. This has been going on forever. And it's like getting worse and worse and worse. It doesn't matter what color you are. You can cling to your ethnic demographics and that solidarity there because you know you're going to go your way. And that just pits everybody at war. We have this big race. It's the only law that there is in the United States these days. Paranoid, religious, and ethnic, and racial lines dividing and having people at each other's throats. And if the children happen to get in the middle, so be it. They're gone in a moment. The economy has failed. Perpetual war is not an option, not a possibility. Rather, it will continue no matter who you vote for. Don't fall for that. Our First Amendment is buried. The government schools have been closed half a year, ironically, the first modern federal government shutdown caused by fiscal gridlock in Washington, D.C., which are so ubiquitous these days, these shutdowns, and you didn't have those, and the time was. It happened during the same the first one of these modern types of its sort happened during the same exact congressional session as the Telecom Act of 96. Coincidence? No. Absolutely not. That's speech. This decades long, somebody's walked that back and said, you moron, Bill. And you moron, what were they ever they were, 104th or whatever they were, 1996 Congress. This decades long plan, which entered its end phase during the Reagan administration to flush everyone but the rich from the face of the earth, along the way destroying American liberty and global peace, is nearing its ultimate fruition, or already did. Yet you're given hope by your people who have captured and defeated your nation. They're saying, get up, fine. Don't do it again. They're kid brothering you. When they make you punch your own self in your face like your big brother used to do. And you'd be so frustrating because you were little. And you were like, man, I'm hitting my own self. You didn't really, you know, it was weird. And that's what's happening. I mean, you're being given mercy, people. Learn. Nearing its ultimate fruition has been gone. Reagan in 1980, like Trump in 2016, made what was then a groundbreaking and risque deal. Well, at least for Reagan, it's no longer groundbreaking in terms of it being successful, with deal with the neoconservatives and the war lobby to seal electoral success, which he did. Trump did. Talked about that in 2016 on this show, on this program. Once those special interests realized in the Reagan administration number one that the coast was clear, they just piped that capital support back into Washington. They found it. They found that capital plumbing. And Reagan was reelected in the greatest electoral landslide in American history. And guess what year? 1984. George Orwell would have, maybe he had something to say. Anyway, I don't mean to sound like a conspiracy theorist, but that was it's ridiculous. Just ridiculous. So hello, President Mondale. Please make yourself at home. Whew. Reagan's popular vote that year was only been surpassed in 2004 when Bush the Younger was reelected, and whose administration's knee-jerk tantrum placed the United States in a Middle Eastern military boondoggles, which still endure today. Who really wants us over there? They have taken over the whole American government just to beat the snot out of some sand and some brown people in the Middle East. And they don't give a crap about you, Americans, or your future, or the future of the world. They're in a holy war. And they have stolen this big old giant maniac weapon that sits over here in the Americas. And they're just going wherever with it, putting it wherever, like she said. And nobody's got the sense to take it back. And foreign governments won't let that be. And they're fine, okay, you're gonna walk around with that gun in the street, you moron. Well, get down here where, you know what I mean? So it's just whoever happens to be in control of the till at the moment, while the headless America wanders around like a crack-smoking idiot in the middle of the street at night with a big sign walking around in traffic. I'm a crazy person with a big weapon. And you just kind of point you off to the ditch, which is what has happened. Meanwhile, they take a few pot shots at their special interest enemies. So embarrassing. Like the elite rich special interests and their permanent international states of war and their government shills, these politicians don't care who or what they buy or sell. They're not Americans. Patriotically speaking, we can talk about, are you a nationalist, are you not, are you a libertarian, are you an American, blah blah yeah, but then what, American in the sense that you don't want the construct that you sit upon right now to either be burnt to a crisp or enslaved. I mean, in that sense, we're all libertarians, unless you just really are into S&M, which is a lot of these. Yeah, that's a lot of these types of people. You don't sell your soul just so you can destroy the world and have a few, you know, good whiffs on your way out because you're not a sadist or a masochist or both. And you certainly don't care if you take billions of people with you. You don't care, much less some faction of those, one political faction of those billions who don't even realize what's happened to them. They hate you for being so stupid in their head. That's what they think. Maybe they're evil and they're maybe intelligent in some little way, like these snakes. You put two animals in a cage and they really know how to kill each other. But can they write it? Can they make art? Can they make a nice huevos rancheros? No. They're not intelligent in that sense. So I'm not calling the American people all stupid. And I'm not saying that these people are super intelligent. I'm just saying you're being hustled. These politicians don't care who, what they buy or sell, not the least of which casualties being freedom, peace, or humanity's very survival. Our nation's antagonists so often frivolously and foolishly and needlessly earned will have no cause to just to show up any respect or dare say mercy to the 21st and 22nd century Americans. Now, there does appear to be some mercy being shown because we are completely occupied and completely under the absolute boot control of foreign governments and their political agendas and special interests, none of which is in corresponding to not one American political will. Not one! And despite the fact that the actual atrocities were committed at any minute, it could get bad. And what's to keep them from knocking it all down? They like to come over here and party. They like the dollar. They like all the cocaine. They like the freedom. That's why we haven't been raised to the ground, completely burned down. People would, you know, the Americans just in the way. But people like America, the place, can do whatever. Despite the fact that the actual atrocities were committed by a small consortium representing special interests who have had increasingly undue influence over our national policy for so long, after all, we could have taken it back, but did not, right, theoretically? I mean, it was stolen. I mean, you could say, his grandma's having her purse stolen. You know, what's she going to do? You know, and in that sense, America does need a chance to get up off the mat, go sit in the corner, get some smelling salts, and figure out what it's got to do to survive. Corollary, large-scale complacency, ignorance, disregard of key issues in exchange for petty pop culture and tiresome racial bickering, both of which are hard-sold by the corporate media for the purpose of generating a smokescreen and distracting Americans from what's the their role as the actual persons who are in charge of the government and from knowing what's wrong with the people that are supposed to be in charge so that they can ignore or remove them as necessary, which is our right. For whatever reason, over long periods of time, petty pop culture and wearisome racial bickering, why ever, it's no excuse for dereliction of our political duties as American citizens. Granted, you are given time to fix it. There's always going to be time as long as there is time in the world. It's also wise that, I mean, again, take a hard look at the foreign connections of the special interest partisans occupants of Washington, D.C., and see what all of their endorsements are. And if you're trying to investigate who our nation's real antagonists may be and what's driving them, our Constitution guarantees us a right of to self-governance, whether at the national, state, regional, county, municipal level, SCMODs, etc., and certainly also guarantees our individual autonomy. There's no such guarantee for forced taxation on a fiat currency to finance perpetual war, corporate welfare, hostile and invasive politico-corporate surveillance state, and the underwriting of national empire. Nobody's required to simply concede their autonomy to anyone, much less anyone acting under the mantle of the so-called official government. This does not mean go burn buildings in Portland or Waukesha or participate in race-based violence or incivility. There are various options that include taking an active interest in your country's politics and of turning off the corporate media whose key role is to serve you the so-called official process distributed by the derelict occupants of our nation's capital right now. Those partisan shills have given away your country to the highest special interest bidders in the name of state capitalism, not liberal, libertarian capitalism, and have indemnified the transaction by hedging the agenda in both corporate parties while feigning an impasse at the highest government levels, all at the expense of your safety and your peace of mind and your freedom and your family and your future and theirs, and therefore your family's futures. And they don't care that it's going to kill them. That's what addiction is like, and people who are in office are high on death, among other things. That's the whole point. They wouldn't have committed. They wouldn't have overcommitted in the first place if they weren't part of an end run. Therefore, not only do you not have to vote for either faction of these shills, but you can also ignore them entirely. The coronavirus panic has ridden in astride the corporate media hell horse for the benefit of only a few special capital interests and also for the benefit of those interests. Petit bourgeoisie shills and toadies who are illegally and unconstitutionally occupying our government venues in Washington, D.C., who, like carrion crows, enjoy the vanities and scraps cast of them by whatever aristocrats and international racketeers happen to be, you know, abusing her at the moment. And they just sell it. At our expense. The coronavirus panic, fanned by the corporate media's death grip on the World Wide Web infrastructure, also a Telecoms Act of 96 battleground, whose deregulation made mass telephony surveillance easier for anyone who has the technology to do so, which is basically every NGO anywhere and all of the weirdos that live next to you, not just one group of criminals in any one seat of government. It's everywhere. I guarantee you, if you're anybody, you know, even if you are dumb as mud, your viral marketing footprint is in the possession of every Politburo officially and probably unofficial Politburos in the world. And if you're a journalist or a public figure or a politician, that also is preventing our politicians from being able to do their jobs. The one who's trying to do what they're trying to do and trying to do it right. It's hard because the mob is such a, there's so many, there's so much crime, and there's so much no ethical baseline whatsoever, and it's just you shout, there's no way that you can't compete. Fanned by the corporate media, and it's made worse, and it is their given quarter by the corporate media, and that's why it's the same ilk of criminals in Washington, D.C. that are sitting wherever, that are occupying local office, that are occupying corporations, that are occupying all the people who are unemployed now, the only way they have to eat or find investiture in the social construct and dating scenarios is to do this. It's where all the money goes. Follow the money. That's where it all is. I'll have you know, I am broke as a joke. Paid my last freaking utility bill last week. Waiting on unemployment from a failed state. Is it going to be? I don't know. Been 6 months. You know? I'm an educator. There's nothing going on. I'm not getting compensated for student teaching, and that's life. Fanned by the corporate media's death grip on the World Wide Web infrastructure for the purpose of, and I follow the money, it's not going to bring you to me. For the purpose of total information control has dealt yet another unprecedentedly debilitating blow to both the United States economy and the First Amendment, both of which have been under siege for many decades. I wonder what could be next. Whoever's coming, it would seem to be theirs for the taking, or whatever is left of it. And after reaching a point at which people will willingly give up their First Amendment freedoms without any protest, complaint, or question, if not without any awareness whatsoever that they've been shackled entirely, the rule of thumb is effectively anything goes, right? Now let me tell you about this national debt in the trillions. But we can still pump all kinds of trillions of dollars to foreign military assets, but the American economy and the job infrastructure is gone. There is nothing. And there's no, fine, you put everybody online and everybody's creating art and everybody's, you know, we've got this technocracy now, fine. But you have to pay people something. But all the money's gone elsewhere. And no one can write a check. You don't want to write a check to every American? What a crazy person. I mean, the current president is like, I'm going to have to write everybody a check if Congress won't get their head out of their ass. And they won't. Of course they won't. Of course they're not going to do that. So even the person, you know, the maniac whose administration moved the embassy from freaking Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, what kind of asshole does that and expects to reap peace? What kind of asshole does it? But at least he's like going to whip out his checkbook. At least he, oh man, you know what? And that's the thing that was in people's mind when they voted for that guy. Like, at least he's a business owner. Like, because they had a dad at their home. He's, fills that picture, and like, we're broke. We're at the steal of bread. He's like, oh, I read a check, shit. They're not letting him do that. That dumb cunt out in the Democratic House leader with her horns. You know? So it's like, Jesus. So the point is, this is a great time to absolve that national debt. Just write it off. Like, it's zero now. And pull all that shit back home and just say, look, we're sorry. And we're not doing this anymore. And either the two turds that are trying to gimme for all the whatever they're trying to gimme for this aforementioned noted previously remarked upon problem where everyone who's failed the retard test gets to go run the country. Dang. Help. Everybody help. Republic of China. People's Republic of China. I'm cool. You come help me. And as long as we're civil and peaceful, you be nice. And I'll be nice, and it's going to be cool. We have all continent over here. I don't want to mess with y'all. And you got to be nice to people. And you can't be telling people they can't worship and assemble and screw the way they want to. You just got to leave people alone. Unless they're hurting other people, you know what I mean? And I don't mean to just focus on the Orient there. That's everybody. I know poor Canada. Oh, God, it's like, I can't imagine what it must be like for them and how embarrassing it is. You know what I mean? Like, it's like you go to the store and there's this kid throwing a tantrum and the kid's too old to be throwing the tantrum, but he's doing it anyway. And everybody else in the store is like, the world, these different nations are like, oh my gosh. And then Canada's the guy that's sitting right next to you. Now, Mexico, I don't know. Different story. You know, and it's like, that's why the cocaine trade and Mexico is what happened, where America's going. Like, there's these rich people in DF. And then everybody else kind of, you know, good luck. And so where does all the money go? All the mob bosses have it.
And there's all sorts of demand and cash coming from this fiat currency up in the United States. And it's like, geez. You know? And people still have this, the audacity to, as a populist cell, say, we've got a government, how many billions of people in this country, but we don't need any bureaucracy at all. And certainly the ones that we're going to have is going to be completely criminally ridden and awful. I mean, you can't have a society of this size without bureaucracy. And the only way that you can do that and not boil over into fascism is through enforcement and establishment and enforcement of literally proper civil rights litigation. And I'm not talking about beating people over the head because they're white. You know? Jack Kenney was a white man. You know? And that he took a slug in North Texas, you know, and it didn't matter that he was a white man. But, you know, I'm not talking about that, but there has to, but the, what I'm saying here is, Senator Sanders, you're right, and he's right, we all know he's right. You know, it's what, you, what a plurality who has to all abide by the same bare, that's a social, that's the kind of socialism that the bare minimum that they needed, the founding fathers needed. Like, there's not only just one of us guy wearing a wig and funny socks and with a musket because we're American revolutionaries. You know, there has to be some sort of agreement. Now, and you get people to just rally. No, let this, let the bureaucracy that allows us to function and not to suffer, forget it. That's commie. We want to do it the way Hitler did it. Yeah, well, look what happened to all of those civilians after the Russians came in there. Could happen any minute here. Especially if you continue to antagonize for decades and decades and decades and decades on end religious, major world religions in their motherland. So it would be nice if we could just pull and absolve all that debt and say, let's get the hell out. We should have done it yesterday. Why not today? And certainly let's do it tomorrow. And I promise I'll sign that. No pork, just sign that. Can you imagine? Humans and their national and affiliative, so their community, their constructs get to live in the world. You know, and the Americans were at a pretty good, auspicious and a very powerful currency. So no, there's nothing to it now. And there's nothing to back it. Relatively nothing to back it. I mean, there's a whole lot less than there was to back yet than yesterday. And why? Because it's all being stolen. Yet no one can write a check. Well, I think the president may be going to have to write a check. You know what I mean? So write us all a check and then absolve that debt. Just write it out like Kramer said in Seinfeld. Just Jerry Seinfeld said, I don't think you know what it means to write something off. And yeah, you do. You just write it off. Well, write off how many trillions. It's not like anybody's going to pay it back. It's not like the people that keep engaging and heightening that debt are doing anything with it that's going to benefit any of us. It's garbage. It's nonsense. It's not like the income taxes are helping in any way or anything but dropping the bucket. So it's intractable, it's retarded, it's ridiculous. So if you're not free, then what the hell are you paying taxes for? You say protection, but you're not free. Protection from increased abuses? You'll never get that protection, although you may be told you're getting it. And that's simply living under oppressive fascist regime, which you are, which this is. Maybe you pay the tax, and the only reason that the rule of law is some order exists is because I think foreign interests want to keep this place, like I said before, from devolving into absolute mayhem. And we get a little unrest going on in these cities and we can't quell it. Maybe you pay the taxes because you don't want to be jailed for not paying them. Well, that does make some sense anyway. You wouldn't need such extraordinary protection from those special interest policies who are ironically acting in your name or on your behalf, and legally speaking, if they were not attacking you, but they are. Directly and indirectly, but they are. And you do, so paying them is a conundrum for those who don't want to be prosecuted or pauperized, and that is most people, regardless of their relationship with the populist ruse. And those people whose special interests, those who have stolen your country from you, actually require your apathy, your ignorance, your looking the other way, your default complicity to do and continue doing what they have done. Start by ignoring them. They are not your leaders. Until D.C. drops the wars, until it stops meddling in the affairs of sovereign free governments, until it stops allowing special religious and capital interests to dictate domestic policy, either directly by dismantling civil liberties or indirectly by overhedging on foreign military campaigns and imperialist policies that are well beyond any necessary primary role as a continental democratic republic government. Until then, no self-respecting American, or anyone else for that matter, needs to listen to anything that comes out of DC, certainly not through the corporate media, which is obviously just working as a shield to divide and conquer the American citizenry from the inside. And so basically the political speak has to happen on the fly and virally. But also that same viral venue, that same style of communication is that which is being used by people who are still very actively trying to splinter and divide and pitch against each other in a civil war, the American people. So you have to be discriminating regarding what you hear. And you hear it doesn't make it right, no matter where it's coming from. If it comes from a viral source, it's as likely to be as incendiary, if not worse, than what comes over the corporate media. You guys got to quit fighting each other. The foreign wars are spilling over right back under our soil now. And more so, international interests are going to let it happen because they're tired of this crap. And America is no longer harmless. I mean, it's less and less harmless to those who would typically be otherwise indemnified. We're not talking about it being all of a sudden harmless to the Middle East. That's not that's preposterous. And it hasn't been harmless to a lot of people for a long time. And remember, there can be no freedom when we're at war. As information is how wars are won and lost, a government at war strives for total information and knowledge control, so do the governments of its adversaries. And the people who don't benefit from war, and that's virtually all people, are caught in the breach. Caught permanently, according to the forever war ideology. Sound familiar? Of course it does. The money behind those modern ideological hot wars, in other words, permanent, unconfined, unrestrained wars, which seep into every aspect of your life, and with which complicity cannot be avoided for those who must live and breathe American air, or suffer or allow quarter for American behavior in the international sphere. That money does not care about people, nor do their corporate operatives who masquerade as your American electoral representatives while infesting our high office. And for the suffering, death, and destruction being disseminated in your name as an American, you're exchanging your innocence, personal freedom, quality of life, your children's future, the future of humanity, all for the sake of some monstrous political treachery which has managed to steal your country and manipulate it toward destruction and evil more and more so every day, trading it for a joyride which will result in tragedy for everyone on earth. Stop it. Stop letting it happen. Stop voting for these mindless automata or these fully cognizant agents, ciphers, who are doing exactly what they intend to do, who over the years have managed to rubber stamp innumerable policy nightmares. Bad karma. Just bad understatement, of course. Just because that's how things are, it's how always they've been. Now, people say that about all sorts of high crime, like human trafficking, selling of children, which is a booming world market, and more and more and more and more so every day, especially this year. And it's always been this way, is what people say, various other age-old failings of civilizations. The oldest profession. Yeah, of course that's said by self-interested monsters. Unfortunately, throughout history, and unfortunately the impression is that most Americans still don't care, like as long as they're pacified with their pound of flesh, which is often the case, but not all the time. But all of those great civilizations have one thing in common. They didn't survive their own corruption. Their empire overextended itself. What does survive, and this is why people will say, oh, well, that old church still lives. Of course, yeah, that one does. That one never goes. What does survive is a proclivity for human subjugation and trafficking and institutional murder. Therefore, each new generation must determine right from wrong on its own. Therein exists one's political comeuppance as a generation, then choose wisely. That's why those old gothic horror films are named what they are. Because those old sins, those old crimes, those old murder, blood, love, I mean, we're not just talking about staring at your hot wife's bikini or friends, whatever. We're talking about, that guy has 15 daughters, I'm taking one tonight. That's what we're talking about. Or I'm going to sell them worth a half $1 million in Juarez. Correcting things that are broken and improving the world. That's why you get a horror title called That Which Survives. And it comes up out of the ground all muddy, and it's going to eat you anyway because it survived death. Yeah, that's allegory, America. Correcting things that are broken. And that's where the moral construct at home having been broken, that's why at some point there's no redeemable value to what you're doing or what's going on your watch. Correcting things that are broken and improving the world are how we survive and thrive, but the prognosis is not so optimistic for those going with the flow, fitting in, being complicit with the way the wind blows, and that's driven by atrocity committed in your name and allowing themselves to be robbed into stupidity and cowed into helplessness by fascist political machines. That's the Odelay Show at 1 hour and 10 minutes nearly. I love you all. Thanks for listening, and we'll check you soon.